Today is November 4th, 2009. We're in Bogota, Colombia, with Maria Isabel Patino, who is director of the Urban Development Institute during the second mayoral administration of Antonis Marcos from 2001 to 2003. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
I thought we might begin by asking you to briefly describe your background, how you came to be involved in municipal government here in Bogota.
Okay, I'm a lawyer. I graduated from Los Andes University, and then I went to Tulane University, where I did had a master's degree in admiralty law, which doesn't have anything to do with that. And then I took the Louisiana State Bar, and I passed, so I practiced there like for 2 years, many, many years ago, 1988. And then I moved to Spain, where I also, you know, in Spain you don't take exams, you do other things, stamps and bureaucratic paperwork. And I validated my title there, and I practiced there as well like a year. And then I came back because I wanted to live here. In fact, I have my green card and I gave it back, returned it, which is like the big prize, and I didn't want to have it anymore since I was going to live here. And I joined the Flower Growers Exporters Association, and I dealt with the dumping order that was imposed on the flower from Colombia. I dealt very much with the U.S. structure and administration, and even though I do not like many things about you know, the country and the way it thinks, especially with foreign policy, I think that it's a good disciplined nation, and I learned a lot from there. So then I worked with the pension funds. I had a training in the Wharton School, a very, very intense, tough training. And then from the pension funds, Private Pension Funds Association, I jumped into the banana growers. I spent some time in the Yuraba region, which is, you know, the region for very difficult region. But I was very much into putting together social and environmental programs, both in the flower growers and in the banana growers. And then, by a coincidence, because I wouldn't say that I was, Santana's called me like by the end of year 2000, and he said that, you know, he was elected mayor, that if I wanted to run this Instituto de Desarrollo Urbano, sincerely, to be honest with you, I didn't have any idea of what the thing was or anything. No background whatsoever with construction. I couldn't recognize between flexible pavement and rigid, nothing at all. But, you know, I had problems in Urabá because I was very much against paramilitares and the banana growers. Well, they had their way of doing things. So we finally didn't get along very well, so I left. And I joined the Mocos administration. I hardly knew Antanas. Maybe, you know, I was very, very, very exposed to the media during the desertification process with Samper, and maybe through that he followed my career, but you know, nothing much. I mean, short interview, and I joined this thing, and I think that if you think it back, I don't know if Antanas, you know, should have done that, because he really didn't know me. He makes you fill out like an exam. You a test, and it's like a 4-page test where he measures whether you are too much, if you are too strong, if you are able to negotiate, if you negotiate too much. Ways of doing things. He concentrates very much in the way you do things. So, you know, maybe I failed the test, and, well, I suppose for whatever reason I ended up there.
Wow. So this is his own personal test that he put together for people?
Well, yes, I think that he drafted and he uses that test for his employees.
So when we were speaking earlier, you said one of the first challenges you faced was this issue of contracts. What was the problem there? What were you stuck with when you came in?
Okay, the development of Bogota in a very short time was kind of crazy. So this is a city that grew, you know, in population faster than in infrastructure, as in all Latin American countries. So there was a very strong necessity of having a massive transportation system, what we call bus rapid transport, BRTs. And there was this discussion between the metro and the flexible component, as we call it, the BRTs. So Peñalosa decided that you know, he wanted to put together Transmilenio, he wanted to implement Transmilenio in Bogotá. But when he made this decision back in 1999, he only had like a year and a half left for change of mayor. And I think that they, with very good intention, decided that they wanted to put together these huge roads for the Transmilenio system using the roads already in existence and having rehabilitation of those roads, not rebuilding them. So in the hustle of getting things done, they you know, design and construction in one whole contract with the same contractor, and they used some material, especially one that it's called fluid relleno fluido. It's called like that. It's like a byproduct of cement, something like that, that you use for certain things, but it has to have a resistance because, well, you know, it's a technical characteristic, and they use it, and the thing failed. And the four main roads that they built failed. When I joined in January 2001, I think that 1 month later, I started to see cracks on these pavements, and Transmilenio was like the big dream of the city. Like people trusting that money paid with taxes was well invested, people very happy for the quality of the transportation service. And so I thought, it's not only that the pavement is cracked, this is a matter of public faith. People don't understand why this happens. And if it happens in one road, okay, but it happened in the four. I have the press news, I'll show them to you before you leave because it's important. I have it in copy so you can take them, where you have this huge, you know, media scandal saying something's wrong here. And CEMEX had like this trade organization where they gathered the cement production companies, being CEMEX the main and the largest. They met with me and they said, listen, this is not a problem of the product, this is a problem of the construction process. And so we had this legal, super, very difficult litigation where the contractor said, I'm sorry, this is not a problem of the contracting process, this is a problem of the product. We had even, you know, criminal action. I testified against CEMEX, by the way, because I was the one who received the advice saying, you know, huge company, come to Mexico, we'll see how it works. Needless to say, I never went. But it's, so I realized that there was a very strong problem in the procedures, in the way that we administer these public resources, and that we need to put something in place. And since I have this, you know, background on the private sector and very naive, I need to say very naive, when I joined the public sector, I am somebody with a I would say a strong personality, and my family, I have the luck of being grown in a family where, you know, the concept, the education, the technology, science is important. I thought that I had to turn all the strategy and make sure that we had first a diagnosis of what was going on. And what we did at the moment was, okay, well, let's think of a way in which we can build this infrastructure, but we make sure that we have, first of all, we have good technologies, very good, excellent technologies. We are not going to learn with this process. We are not going to learn with these projects. If we want to learn, we have a lab, a scientific institution, we do some trials, and then we have a technical norm, and then everything is approved and we use it. But we are not going to do innovation here. Number two, we do design. We complete designs, as we call it in engineer, phase three, like complete design with this contractor. After we do that, we will definitely shift the risk of construction on the constructor. Since you're having somebody designing and somebody constructing, usually you face the problem, you can imagine. Something happens and the constructor said, I'm sorry, but I didn't do this design. So we introduce something that it's called the pre-construction phase, by which you have 4 to 6 months before construction begins. You do your bid, you select the contractor in an objective, as we call it, objective selection process, bids. And once you sign the contract with the contractor, you say, stop there. It's not as that you go to the road and have the picture of the mayor showing that we start the project. You don't do anything. You sit down, you take these drawings, you take these designs, and they're going to be yours. After 4 months, they're going to be yours. So you better watch out. You better make sure that you identify the things that you don't like. If you think there are deficiencies, you bring them up. Because this is going to be yours. And there is a specific clause, very strong, saying, this is your design. If I sign this contract, I hereby understand clearly that this is my design, that there is no way whatsoever that I can get rid of that. So phase one, pre-construction. Then you have construction. And the third one, which is very, you know, common in developed countries, is maintenance. Maintenance doesn't exist in these countries. I mean, there is no way whatsoever that somebody would spend 1 peso in maintenance, because maintenance, the things are there. You don't get credit for that. So we had 5 years of maintenance with the same contractor. Legally, that means that not only you take care of these designs, you build this road, you stay there for 5 years. And you don't go with an insurance policy that we will never, you know, collect, you know. You have to sue the insurance companies, because the fine print tells you that, you know, the story. So you stay there, my friend. If something happens, you are there. And there is a very strong tool that you have in the administration in Colombia that is called the caducidad. I don't know how to translate that. Caducidad is like termination of the contract by unilateral decision of the administration if you breached your obligations in such a way that you cannot continue with the contract. So you tell the contractor, during the maintenance time, if something happens and it shows that you did a bad job, I declare caducidad, which means that you cannot hire with the state, with the government in the next 5 years. You get strong fines and you are like thrown to hell, more or less. I mean, you are going to be pointed and you are going to be a very bad person for doing that. So the result is you have Carrera 30, you know Carrera 30 where you go to the airport? I'm very proud of Carrera 30. You have Avenida Sur, and you have something that's called Calle 13 Americas that goes to a very, you know, poor neighborhood. And those three roads, second phase, they worked fine, no problems, no litigation, no cracks. And it's not because, I mean, it's as simple as shifting the risk. And the last thing that we did is financially, we had monies from the fuel surcharge that would come in the future, you know, collection of this tax. But we don't have it in the present. So we didn't have enough money to build the thing in the present, because we had to wait until the years passed and we gathered the money. So we said, no, let's do this. This is the concession strategy. You, as contractor, go to a bank. You get the money. And I sign a contract with you. I am the government. And I assure you that future income from the fuel surcharge taxes will be assigned to you exclusively. And this is foreign, I mean, this is sovereign, you know, guarantee. This is the government. But if a contractor goes to the bank for money, the banks, which are very difficult people, don't lend monies to whoever. The banks make a very strong study from you, and the banks require equity from you. So look at this. From one side, you have a contract that has very clear understanding on risk allocation. On the second hand, through financing, you get to achieve two goals. Number one, you don't have to take the money from that, you know, fiscal budget. You can go to the future. Forces you to plan. Second, you have an individual going to the bank, and the bank is going to help in control, in selection of that individual. Because again, banks don't lend money to whoever. Number three, all banks, in order to lend you money, require equity, which means that this guy, it's a partner to the project because his money is there as well. He will get it back, but he's putting his money in the project in advance. And finally, the insurance company that is going to give us the insurance for the whole project has, you know, some more solid risk analysis, and in the end, you will have better premiums. So we ended up being very, very, very proud of that. You have here in this project, you have the contribution from the national government up to maximum 70%. This is the local government. And you have Transmilenio, which is the entity that operates the buses, and IDU, which is the institution who does the infrastructure. Unfortunately, Bogota is the only city of Colombia that has two institutions, one concentrated in the transport engineering, in the operation of the system, and the other one doing the infrastructure. In other cities, you have the infrastructure and the operation in one sole entity. And my friends, infrastructure is like heaven, because infrastructure is power. Infrastructure is something that you can show there, like pyramids, for example. So you have pharaohs and people like that, very proud of that. It happens exactly the same with a stupid small road. So everybody's concentrated on the infrastructure, not very much on the engineer, and then we'll see the results. I mean, you don't have very good systems working today. But we have that. So I would say that, in conclusion, the introduction of the pre-construction, the maintenance, the risk allocation, the participation of the financial sector, the planning of the future, resulted in a very innovative way. Just to conclude, the World Bank lends money to the national government to finance this project. The World Bank comes here and says, well, I'm sorry to tell you that, but your contract seems to be very interesting, but we have formats and we have forms. And we only use World Bank forms. And the World Bank forms do not work in these countries. They don't work. You cannot impose fines to the contractor. There's a lot of things that do not work. You don't have the pre-construction phase. By the way, they are so wrong that the constructor takes care of the design of the drawings, and then you approve what this guy did. When you approve, the risk shifts back to you. So basically, we said, well, that's too bad. That's too bad because the employees from the World Bank, they have to allocate loans. People do not know that. They think that World Bank is giving us graces. That's not true. They have to allocate good works, good jobs. And we knew that our project was good. So they said, you know, if we don't use our forms, there is no project. And we said, well, that's too bad. That's the problem of the national government. Look for finance somewhere else. We are not going to change our forms. Period. And we never changed them. And they got a waiver. They got a waiver in the World Bank, and we used our forms. So, you know, it's a lot of things in between. It's the way you relate with the multilateral institution. They don't come here to tell us how to do things because they don't know how to do things. I'm sorry to tell you that. Very few of them have been, like, in the asphalt doing things. Now, we ended up having good people, reasonable people that understood. So you see all the things in between. For me, the construction of the road in the end, well, it's nice. It's a nice road, but that's not the point. It's all the things that you did in between to have credibility, to have discipline among the contractors, to understand that when you deal with public monies, you don't play around with that. I think that it's all in between.
So these reforms that you put into the contracting process, like say the concession idea, the 5 years of maintenance, the pre-planning phase, where did you get the idea to incorporate those from? Were there precedents here in Bogota already in other areas, or did you have staff that were suggesting these ideas? Is something you were familiar with yourself?
Well, I was, first of all, was as I told you, I am, my two grandfathers are doctors. My father is a doctor. My sister is a doctor. My mother was a bacteriologist. So I was trained in a house where you have to diagnose everything before you speak. So you have to learn what's on the table, and then you can talk. Entonces, you know, I think that what happened in phase one was very constructive, because I had to solve the legal problem in phase one by trying to understand whose responsibility was. It's not rocket science. I mean, you realize that things happen because you don't have a design, because. Entonces, you see all that, and one neurona, and then you just do exactly what you need to do. And also, I have a very good law firm. I had I hired somebody who's very good at these contracts, and we had very long discussions. Conflict resolution was another important thing. You don't go to judges. We were naive. We thought that universities were perfect to solve problems, because if the university gets involved in a problem between the government and the contractor, first, the university doesn't have any profit interest. Number two, you have universities, which are paradise. You know, technical people oriented in, you know, good practices. And number three, university will learn about real life. Because by resolving these problems, they would be involved in the problem. Ended up being a little bit bureaucratic and a lot of jealousy. Amazing. If you go to one university, the other would say, why you go to that university? So it became a problem. There's a lot of jealousy in the academic community, a little bit. A little bit of egos. So that was something that we tried to develop, but didn't work that well. So we ended up in small arbitration tribunals, small ones, to solve problems.
And once you had come up with this new model for contracting, was it enshrined in the way the city would do infrastructure contracts in the future? Was this something that was set as the norm now, and then from there on out?
It's the norm now not only in Bogota, but it's the norm now in many other cities.
And was that legally set? Was there a law?
No.
That it's just the way that the city operates.
Yeah.
And does that extend beyond infrastructure and other contracting processes, or is this?
No. As far as I know. All right, when you have Antanas Mockus as mayor and you go to his office and you say, listen, mayor, we are going to do this, you are not going to see, for example, some of the works, we will end our period and you will not see this. So somebody else is going to start after the pre-planning, pre-construction, somebody's going to start the work. We will not see it. Nobody will know. In fact, many people do not know that we were behind these things. But he's almost perfect. So the guy goes, no problem, do whatever you need to do. The other thing that I wanted to tell you in relation to this is that the national government initially said, well, that's too bad. Yeah, we need to give you the money because there is a pari passo contribution, and if you go to allocate future fuel charge, a tax, that the national government had to do the same, because we had to go pari passo, and they approved monies but allocated every year. So they said, well, that's too bad. Yeah, we signed that, but you know, we don't have the money. And well, sometimes we sign contracts, but you know, it's the national government. This is just a corporation intention. I said, no. You don't understand. You signed the contract. You signed the contract. And President Uribe was a candidate at that time. When this thing started, then he became president. He announced that he was going to support Transmilenio. He became president. So he went there and said, well, you in your campaign said all this, and by the way, you signed this contract. So, you know, they had to do a bureaucratic approval so that we legally would have everything in order to go to the banks and tell the banks, lend money to this guy that we will respond for that money. So we needed to have that very, very clear. And they said, no, we don't. We are sorry, but we don't. I said, well, you. Because we went back to Antanas and we said, we're going to sue the national government. We're not going to accept this. Because they usually treat the other cities, you know, Bogota is something different, but they usually are very, very arrogant with small cities and all that. So we went to the state council, which is in the jurisdictional branch, is the court that deals litigation between governmental entities. So we went to the council, and they have a stage that it's called the advisory It's like an advisory to the ministers. It's a special, you know, it's a special council, it's a small group of people that you don't litigate as such, but you consult. Only ministers can do this consultation. So we propose to the Minister of Finance, you don't shut the door to us like this. We'll do something. Let's go to the advisory council and consult. Because they said that legally we cannot do the concession. Somebody there that decided that it was not possible because of technical reasons and stuff like that. So finally, we went to the council. And we presented our case in a very respectful way, and the national government presented theirs. Don't think that this is because anybody here is intelligent. Sincerely, I mean, this is basic legal concept. This is more politics than legal, interesting ideas. This is basic. It's like first year of law school. So we ended up and we sat there and the people from the council said, what is this? I mean, what are you talking about? There is no question. There is a contract signed. This is legal. This is the code. This is what it says. No. We just wanted to make sure. We just wanted to make sure that everything is working fine. And so the council said, you comply with that. Otherwise, the city of Bogota will have a very good course of action against the national government. Nobody wants to sue the national government. Nobody wants to sue a president that in campaign said this, this, and this, which is written in this piece of paper. Nobody wants to see that because nobody wants to be incoherent here. No, we'll do it. Needless to say, they put the money, and the day that we started the concession thing, entonces you should see the Transmilenio buses on this park, and photographs, and media, and they took the picture, and they, you know, sitting in the bus and saying by the window. I mean, it was very funny, very, very funny. But we got it. So the other thing that we learned is that the national government fulfills its obligations with the cities. There are other 6 cities doing this. And I travel around, and I sit with the other cities, and I say, no. The government doesn't tell you that. No. The World Bank doesn't tell you that. That's something that we do with antennas, with the new corporation that we have. We just put in place and try to divulgate and promote these things.
So we've talked about the technical issues, the legal issues, and the national, even political issues. But how about the local political issues? Because as you said, everyone loves infrastructures. Contracts are worth a lot of money. City councilmen usually love infrastructure. How did that all factor into what you were trying to do?
Well, let's go to issue number 2, the city council. Besides the huge Transmilenio system, which is like the main thing here, there is something that is very important in this, and it's related to the local neighborhoods where you have the local roads, which are a absolute complete disaster for many reasons. The condition is amazingly bad. I would say that it's almost 50% of the network roads are local roads. And out of those, I would say 70% is in bad shape from a technical measure. You have very few resources, and you need to understand that if you have 100 pesos and you are going to invest 1 pesos in the Transmilenio system, you have buses with 160 people enjoying that peso. As if you go through, you know, roads here in the Strato 6, it's us with our cars. And these people, it's more pedestrian. Really, you end up thinking that this is what you want. Not this, you want this, finally, this. So, and this is the way the local council, the city council, you know, gets its roots, and this is the votes. So huge necesities and 2 pennies. So we said, okay, there is one thing there is no way to increase the monies. We promoted in the National Congress the increase of fuel surcharge from 20 to 25%. 5% was like, I mean, a fight. I mean, it's kind of something amazing, amazing to have those 5 points of increase. So the way of doing things here, you sit down and you realize there is no way whatsoever that I'm going to get more resources. There's no way. You have to understand that. I mean, you can be a dreamer, you can be naive, you can be pushy, you can be strong, but you cannot be stupid. I mean, it comes to a point where you say, there's nothing else that I can do. But on the other hand, you have certain roads that in the city you need to take care of. I mean, they're main roads and you need to take care of them. So there is something called valorización. Valuation. I don't know how
valorization.
Valorization. And it's the old strategy when you are in a party and somebody wants more beer and everybody pitches in and you go and buy more beer. That's more or less valorization. And the city council has to approve that. But when you do valorization, you have to buy land, you have to buy houses or buildings because you have to build up the roads, and these are you don't do valorization for this because the capacity of payment of these people, the ability of payment, the economic situation is you do valorization so that these neighborhoods we pay for the huge roads and the whole city pays, and you allocate the payment according to certain technical standards like the strato, the residential, commercial, industrial, number of floors that you have, all those technical things and the level of benefit that you get from the work. And we presented this to the council. I was super, super naive, amazingly naive. I mean, sincerely naive. And I did a super, super presentation. I always do presentations, but a super presentation. We had the police to lend us a helicopter, and we were almost very responsible. We were taking pictures. We developed an indicator of connectivity. So if you do this road and you just did this little piece, but you open this little piece, then you show that, just by this little piece you had you cannot imagine. We worked like 9 months. And, city council, I was like the technical person, very, very aggressive, very arrogant. They thought that I was aggressive and arrogant, which I was. And you get into the council, and it's like you enter a circus, more or less. You see all kinds of people doing strange things in this auditorium, and you put together your computer, and you turn on the presentation, and you start to talk, and nobody listens to you. Nobody, not one single person. They walk around, they eat, they have lunch, they call friends, they chat. So you don't know what to do. You take the microphone, you say, please, excuse me, I'm sorry to, I apologize, but I need to make this. My first thing, Antana has a very hard description saying that once he was offered something like that and he wanted to throw up. He wanted to throw up. He said, like, I felt like this. I was like, no. Well, go back to my office. Again, in the agenda. And again, I go with my presentation, PowerPoint. Nobody pays attention on the circus. Well, to tell you the long story short, five times I presented the thing. No way whatsoever. I'm not going to give you any jobs. And I told them, it's not only because of a moral principle, it's just of a practical principle. Can you imagine? You are 42. I mean, let's say that I would never, but let's say, so that you understand, I do it with you, and then with you, and then with him, and so how 42. I mean, it's a matter of minimal mathematics. And by the way, I wouldn't do it even if it was one. So Antana said, Marisabel, we are wasting time here. We have to dedicate our time to something else. Just stop. I mean, show the city that these people do not want to vote, something that is very important. But I said, no. We prepared the document, and on the 22nd of December, I called the wives of the concejales, like 6 of them. Hi, my name is Maria Isabel. You don't know me. You are the wife of Concejal Matt. Well, I want to tell you, I've been working very hard for this project. We need to build this road, you need to help me, please, you need to help me, we need to show. I started to delegate on the 19th. The vote was like the 20-something of December. All my colleagues said, poor you. I mean, you're so stupid. But let me tell you, they went to the session, and they approved the whole thing. So I, of course, with Fernando, I embraced Fernando, because I was like the image of transparency, and he was precisely the opposite. But I want to tell to the city of Bogota that Fernando did this job. He started this project because he I don't know if he understood what he approved. I don't care. But not one job, not one contract. So that was like one thing. We got this approved. At that time was like $70 million, which is not that much, but we got it approved in December without any trades there. And the other thing is that we sent the invoices and we started to get people in the places where we have accommodated for payment. But you would see lines and lines and lines of people. So one day I went down and I said, maybe we got up. I mean, there must be a mistake. Maybe these people think that we're paying to them because this is not possible. Well, the football stadium, El Campín, believe me, I have to accomplish the campaign and special hours so people extended schedules so people would go and pay. I mean, we had very, very high collection, how you say that, rate, like nearly 80% like in the 3 months after the invoice was sent. And this is because Santana's was, you know, in the meantime, Liliana and Hugo Acero, and everybody was like, you know, do it right, do it decently. I mean, you always have that choice, just do it right. So it was very, very nice to see that we got it with the council. Now, from that point on, every time that I would go to the council, always I would go with my PowerPoint presentation, and always I would have my technical speech. And they would say, well, again, this woman is coming in, we are going to be bored. But by as the time passed by and you start to recognize, you know, skills from these people, and you stop telling them you are a piece of shit, you are corrupt. Well, you read this.
Yeah.
you end up understanding that they want to be decent as well. So as Santana says, you are not born citizen. You become citizen if you are treated as a citizen. So if you treat them well, and we learn many, many things about them because these people know these things very much. Now coming to this point, we decided that we're going to design a methodology to allocate the few resources based on technical reasons. So first of all, we decided that we're going to do roads near hospitals and schools. Number two, we were going to allocate according to the strato and the necessity. In other words, whether or not you had this type of situation. This is kind of public health situation. This is not a road in bad shape. This is something that, you know, when you have rainy season, it's horrible for children to cross the street and they get this mud in their feet. And as you know, mud is very, very infectious. So we did that, and we called the neighborhoods had to file a form and participate. And then we gathered the forms, we mounted this in a small software that we Excel basically with some a little bit of ideas. I have a very good staff, local staff from the institution, and we hired a theater where we invited all the participants. And out of, I don't know, 400 neighbors, we were going to allocate 10. So everybody got into the theater, very enthusiastic, very nice, and very happy with us because we were going to allocate the money for the neighborhoods, but we would only have money like for 10. So that meant 390 people, neighborhoods. In other words, many, many families in each neighborhood. We had screens, video beams and computers, so that we explain the process. This is the way you fill out the form. So you fill it out this way. For example, this neighborhood, very well, you did it very well. In this, you know, box, you put this and this and this, and we show them. So they looked at that. And then this is the way you introduce the form, and they looked at that. And now we push enter, and the system, you see the table, exec tables crossing by, the system will throw us the priorities where the first 10 neighborhoods will be the ones that get the money based on this technical criteria. So people sitting there, and this Excel table would go on the screens. We're sitting very proud. Ta! The result comes, and we read the 10. And number 10, Barrio Libral. And that's it. So people go like, and the others? And I said, no, microphone, no, as I explained to you, fuel surcharge, we get this amount, to this click document where you see certification of fuel surcharge, we have whatever, $30 million. It goes to the institution, click budget, do you see the, you know, and then click again, and that's it. So no more money. 10 neighbors are going to do very nice roads, connection, mobility. You don't have your street and then your street, and two streets are connected by this. You don't do that. You have corridors. You cannot imagine. I mean, people stood up, came down. We have the, unfortunately, we had to have the ejército, the army, and police, ambulance, and everything out. And I started to see these people coming, and you know my size, people coming towards me, absolutely, pero indignados, saying that this is a joke. I mean, who do you think we are? And I couldn't understand. I said, I don't understand. This is the first time in your lives that somebody's giving you, you know, counts on this. What are you talking about? So in the end, like 8 p.m., scream and shout. So, no, I sat down in this chair and I said that people are going to kill me. If I were them, I would kill myself as well. But, you know, let's face it, let's do something. Well, these neighbors decided to give back, in other words, give back 50%. And we were going to have like cement companies and people to, you know, contribute with material so that we can, you know, spend a little bit the use of the resources. So finally we did it. I had a presentation at the World Bank once in which we explained the way we did it and the way we classified and the technical criteria that we use. So we started to do it like every 4 months. I mean, every time that we have one penny, one single penny, we'll do it and do it repeatedly, go to the neighbors. So again, in the end, I don't care about, you know, I don't care about very much whether this is nice or not. Or yeah, I think this is better, but it's not that the point. It's the way we communicate it with the people.
And so on that point of communicating with people, what about taxes more broadly? The idea in the Marcos administration, the idea that you were kind of building a culture of taxpayers to some degree.
Well, the huge thing is when he proposed to have this voluntary tax payment. Mm-hmm. So when he said that, we all looked at and said, well, antennas, you know, back to earth, what are you talking about? And he said, yeah, I think people will pay voluntarily. And people did. We had like 60,000 people. And they choose. You could choose between among hospitals, schools, ciclorutas, or this it was called ciclorruta zonal, where you had the ciclorruta and pedestrian. Non people did. I mean, I think that Antanas basically, he's like an essence. He's not very charismatic. I mean, he's not the leader that would speak up, scream and shout. People go like this. He's not that type. He produces something among people like to say, I know, it's better to do things right. That's exactly what he is. I am more executive oriented, and in the corporation that we have, he's the president. I am the executive director. But I do my legal stuff apart from that. But I think that, you know, that combination of somebody that I respect and I admire that much, because you can, as I say, you can kick a tree, and many people like us, they fall. I mean, you have good directors, good executives, people that, you know, follow procedures. That's very common. But you don't find people that really think and in a very respectful and nice way teaches every time, every day. When he ran for president, I was his vice president formula. We didn't get a vote, I think. It's like 142, 100 votes or something like that. But I knew that. I knew we were not going to do it. And we just traveled around the country. We went everywhere. And I learned a lot. I mean, it's really coherent, and he's very decent. And that's why people pay taxes, I think.
So at a couple of points, you've mentioned that you had some really good staff to help you with this on different issues. Where did you find these people? Were they already in the institute? Did you go out and look for
both.
People? Did you bring them in?
Both. In the institute, you have all those, you know, altruist, consecrated people, super nice people that they don't care about their salaries or their work conditions, and they work like super many hours. You have to do it as well. I mean, if you want to move people, you have to do it as well. I mean, you don't leave by five and hi, bye guys, see you tomorrow. No, you have to do it with them. You have to get involved in the detail. I don't trust that the managers just go on big issues. Managers go on details and understand exactly what's going on. I was a lawyer. The institute is full of engineers. It's full of engineers. So, you know, what is this lawyer doing here? So I had to learn. I like engineering very much. Super interesting. It's a very interesting career. So you have to learn, and when you learn from the people, and they have the pleasure of teaching you, like guys as young as you are, and then you go like, okay, I don't understand this drawing. I don't know what is right, what is left. You know, we women have this super brain damage that you know, you don't know exactly where to go, and that's, I have it very, very developed. So when they put a drawing, I mean, basically, I didn't represent, it's like this thing, it didn't represent anything to me. So they teach you, then they show you, and you have to listen. So they like it. And when you take the information that they give you and you process it, and so we said that lawyers and engineers should marry, because it's a super combination. It's a super combination. You give me this, I give you that. So you are an engineer, but you have a lawyer in yourself. I am a lawyer, I have an engineer in myself. So we promoted that. We promoted that. So I think that's all. But I was very strong. I was very strict. I was sometimes impatient, I think. I changed people. And I used to call in for what we call selección objetiva. I mean, I like the person that renovated this house. This house is recently renovated. Was the one who dealt with me this local pavements, and we get along very well, and I have a lot of confidence in her. And I didn't know her from before. Many people I didn't know. I mean, I'm very bad in recruiting because I am very emotive, and so 5 minutes after somebody answers como three good questions, I think, listen, that's, you are the person, you are perfect, you are the guy, and I don't care. Because in interviews and recruiting, you never know. You never know. It's like marriage, you never know.
you said after all of this, in the presidential bid, you traveled a lot and you learned a lot in those travelings. So I'm wondering, when you were at that point and since then, what lessons from your experience here in Bogota do you think are exportable elsewhere? Things that were done well, or things that maybe should be done differently in other places?
The thing is that Bogota has money. The city has financial resources in comparison to other cities. And the city is very empowered. In other words, the national government doesn't come in and tells you what to do. In the other cities, they depend too much on national government and finances. So they turn to be more, you know, submitted, to put it in some words. I would say that these practices, they, and we have been promoting them. I left 6 years I go and I'm still visiting. Yesterday I came from Barranquilla, so I still promote those. Yeah, I think that good practices are well accepted. Like in other cities we did, you know, Hugo Acero is going to tell you about the Noche de las Mujeres, that night where only women can go out to the streets. We just did it in Barranquilla and Cartagena. We didn't have one single homicide that night. In Barranquilla, for every 15 killings men, it's just one woman. For every 15 men killed, there is just one woman. So, yeah, I think that promotion of good practices, people realize. And we finally showed that technical approach is good, that you can stand up and say things to multilateral agencies and it works. Empowerment would be empowerment. Telling people, speak up, don't go with the flow. Speak up and protect your things.
And I guess a last question is a little unfair, but what would you have done differently if you could do it again? What didn't go quite so perfectly?
I was very anxious to turn things to procedures, and I was very impatient. I mean, if I were to do it again today, I think that I would be more calm, more mind oriented, less anxious. I was very stressed, super stressed, because in the end I had a lot of lawsuits. I handled 200 lawsuits. And they embargoed my account one time. And I left it like that. And of course that was declared null and void. So I think that I lacked more tact in dealing with people. I think that I was sometimes too strong. So I put a lot of pressure on people. We could have done it without that much pressure. Unnecessary pressure. I mean, I don't know if I caused harm to the personality of some people because I was very strong and I was very strict. And then I didn't want to smile every day in the elevator because the book says that you have to smile every day, because I thought if I give 5 miles, I am wasting time, and I need the time to produce results, and I have to attend these people, and you have the media and the concejales, and you have the contracts, and it's like 3,500 contracts that you administrate, and everything goes wrong, and then you have an accident, and then you run to the council, and then the mayor calls you, and then the media, and then somebody, one of the big, you know, bosses of the private sector calls you up because he has a problem in his road. And you go like, give me a break, I don't have time to waste with you. I was very strong, very arrogant, and very desperate too. And that was not necessary. It's lack of experience.
Well, it does sound like quite a challenge though, anyway.
No, and the last thing that I think I didn't do well was the way that we allocated these resources to the neighbors, because that was a mistake, because even though it was very well intentioned to be transparent and to show, that was not very intelligent, because these people, first of all, Excel tables. You can imagine these people. I mean, let me show you the picture so that we all realize where we stand. These people sitting there saying, you know, what is this? I mean, think about it. And you would see the Excel things going like this. You know, I don't think that we did it well. We should have done it that way. We should have gone to every neighbor. We should have had small groups. We should have had more time to explain. We couldn't deal with, you know, this gap of knowledge and technology. And just because we had the need to show that we were transparent, we submitted these people to this situation very frustrated. Frustration, a lot of frustration. That was not a good idea. Very well intentioned, but you can do that in New Haven, but not here.
So perhaps make the decision and just let the decision be known rather than involve them in the
yes, exactly. Or show them more locally. Be more patient. Mm-hmm. Spend more time and go, you know, neighbor by neighbor and with staff. Nobody requests you to do it, but you cannot be that technical. I mean, you cannot permit that the aim of being transparent drives you crazy. And that happened here.
Well, thank you so much for a fascinating and very clear conversation.
Okay, no, my pleasure.